Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back in a very interesting time as we talk about all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. We're kind of on the precipice. Oh, God, I knew I wouldn't get that word out right. We're on the cliffhanger of an episode, waiting for like our next episode to start, only to be told like through an entertainment magazine that production has been postponed a few more weeks. So many moons ago, Games Workshop promised us quarterly FAQs and chapter approves, and our first one was supposed to be out this past March. And then they announced, hey, we're just going to wait till after Adepticon to make sure, you know, we get all that information in there. Well, it's a week later. Still no FAQ. Ray, what have you been doing the past the time as we wait for this FAQ?
Eagerly waiting to get the Necron Codex in my hands.
I think it's been the hardest part as we've been talking a little bit about list changes, about all these new codices that have come out. You know, this week we gotten all the previews for Drakari. The Necron Codex was finally released this past Saturday. And I'm afraid to even think about a list knowing that what could this FAQ be? I've got a lot of people have grandiose ideas. I have other people think, they're going to answer a few questions and that'd be it. So we still wait with bated breath. When would the FAQ actually drop and what treasures will it have?
Yeah, you know, with our luck, it'll probably be tomorrow. But honestly, I would be surprised if we don't see it till next week.
Yeah, it's interesting. One thing though, this isn't like they have to go to print or anything. You know, the FAQ is a digital document. They just, you know, it's going to be a PDF and they throw it up on the web page. So production wise, pretty minimal. And so it should be able to come up pretty quick. So really is it a content issue? Is it they waited until after Adepticon and then realized, oh my gosh, it's Easter holiday? So maybe we'll get to it next week. And the Easter holiday is a lot bigger in Europe than it is here in the United States. So I could definitely see that being a big issue. Either way, yeah, it's with our luck, it'll come tomorrow. I have to admit, there was almost like very little news on the Warhammer community page even this morning. So it was almost like they didn't plan on having a whole lot available because of the holiday again.
Yeah, I think the only thing they talked about today was a single model that's coming out for Necromunda.
Which they didn't even, I don't think they even had pictures for. They just had like a concept art for it. I actually saw some people playing Necromunda at our local game store on Friday. I was shocked. I was like, oh. I was very confused because I saw all this like Games Workshop stuff, but I saw Infinity Terrain. I was like, what's going on over there?
Yeah, I've seen some, I haven't seen Necromunda get played, but I have seen some like Shadespire. I'm kind of curious on the Necromunda, but, you know, I'd want to do the Gene Stealer cult, which means I'd have to go find that white dwarf. I'm trying, but it's kind of one of those things that we don't really have people in the group to play it.
Yeah, I'm on the fence because also that with that tease of Kill Team coming back out, I'd rather play skirmish level 40k stuff than start a whole new with all new factions and a whole new meta. I have to admit, I was never a big fan of the campaign system in Necromunda. It's just that whole, I'm playing a game and they run into a buzzsaw and, yep, three of my gang members are dead. You're now playing with half an army for the rest of the league. I'm like, ugh, that kind of stinks.
Then again, you wouldn't have to buy anything. You'd just repurpose your old gang.
You're true, but there was this, yeah, there's sort of this element that you kind of develop your special characters on and you kind of role play through them a little bit. And that was always frustrating. The same thing happened in Blood Bowl. You know, you get this team and it's one thing like in 40K, if you lose your warlord, you're like, crud, I gave up some points, but there's always next round in the tournament. There is no next round in Blood Bowl or in Necromunda. That guy's gone. He's dead. And you're like, oh. So I'm playing with a lesser army for a while till I build it back up again. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it I found it very unappealing. So, but I am anticipating Kill Team being very interesting. Look at that. Other interesting news from the world of 40K. This rumor comes to us via Bolter and Chainsword, and then rebroadcasted onto Bell of Lost Souls, was that kind of a follow-up from our story from last week. So last week we talked about in the Adepticon previews that they were posted on the Warhammer community page. They showed like a kind of a centerfold page of a battle report involving orcs. And in the far distance, you can see what looks to be like a giant orc walker. As it turns out, these rumor sources are saying that if you had read the series The Beast, which, correct me if I'm wrong, it is a 30K novel.
Yeah, it takes place within probably 1 or 2,000 years of the Horus Heresy having ended. I mean, at the point, it's still technically the Scouring at that point.
Ah, okay. So sort of an in-between, but it's clearly an orc story about the beast. Apparently, that is the model for the new orc codex that's supposed to come out. And one of the key new models that's coming out, which is called an Orc Prime. And these things are supposed to be gargantuanly huge. And the biggest and baddest of them all is none other than a reimagined Ghazghul Thraka, which I thought was interesting that they're going to make him the ultimate Prime. So, first of all, I thought Prime is not exactly the most orky name in the world. But there's been, if you read those books and pull up the Wikipedia there, or the whatever the equivalent is called.
I mean, there's two. There's the wiki, and then there's the Lexicanum. I think it's kind of interesting if that is the route they're going to go, because one of the big things is that they talk about the war boss that was on Ulanor being the biggest one, and there never being one quite that got quite as big after that, with the possible exception of the beast. But I don't know. Maybe they'll explain with the time jump that Ghazghul was able to get larger. But I also heard one person say that he thought that orcs had a 30-year lifespan in the fluff.
Okay, from the Beast novel. So this is from the Lexicanum. I take that back, not the wiki. So the Beast class prime orcs were perhaps the largest orc war bosses ever encountered, which in orc society denoted his power, prestige, and lethality. Said to be the size of a hablock, the beast made even knobs appear as mere children in his presence, and its mouth was filled with tusks the size of tree trunks. When one was finally encountered on Ulanor, the beast was first to be thought to be a 10-meter statue. However, when the statue moved, the Imperial invaders realized it in fact was a massive orc encased in battle armor. Another one of the prime orcs was encountered by Imperial forces of Ulanar and said to be the size of a small gargant. A single arm of its massive battle armor was equipped with two battle cannons, as well as autocannons, missile launchers, flamers, and other weapons. Its other arm wielded a vibromace as tall as a space marine.
That's pretty well written out.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, huh? And then you look at the picture and you go, oh my god. That's what it is. So if they stick to exact scale, 10 meters is about 10 inches on the tabletop. So that's about Wraith Knight size.
I guess we'll have to see. They still haven't even announced exactly the Orc Codex.
And it's funny you mentioned that. So they reprinted an old article about the potential rumors, you know, but when certain codices were supposed to be released. So right now, they're still on pace to being correct. So we March, we saw the new Necromunda tiles and add-ons. We saw Codex Tau. We saw Codex Necrons. We saw some new stuff for Blood Bowl. In April, we've seen Drukhari. Technically, we'll see it next week. Next comes Harlequins. And that should be it for April, which I thought was kind of slow.
As well. And I've heard some stuff that April's going to have the Deepkin.
That would make sense. So this is where it goes a little off the rails here. They say in May, a box game's coming out. Well, we've already gotten that. And then they say Codex Space Wolves. I'm like, well, what about Imperial Knights and Death Watch? So something's going to be missing there. Here it is, late April, May, early June. Big release for Elves, first Age of Signar. So there you go. There's your deep... What do they call the Deep Elves? What are they?
Deepkin.
Deepkin.
Actually, they're pretty cool.
They are pretty cool. I like the guy whose his cape looks like a wave crashing. That's just really cool. Those turtles are pretty cool too.
Still can't tell if they're dark elves or high elves.
I would assume they're dark elves or like what's left of the Corsairs.
Possible.
I don't know. No idea. I don't know. I just look at conversion bait. There's a lot of parts there I want to get my hands on. Anyway, in June, according to this person, Codex Orcs is supposed to come out. So again, check for yourself if you want to read it. It was originally printed, I think it was Sunday on Bell of Lost Souls. And again, this was reprinted from Bolter and Chainsword. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out. So that's our news so far. We'll get into some more of the Drakkari stuff in our discussion part of the program. We're going to do kind of what we did last week, and each of us will break down the new, what they call Drakkari Obsessions, which is their version of Chapter Tactics. Meanwhile, we need to get to our most dramatic part of the show. The fact there were no major tournaments last weekend. Which we expect would happen, being it was a major holiday last week, and so we hope you had a wonderful Easter. Ray, how was your Easter?
Relaxing.
That's good to hear that. Mine was absolutely crazy. Between my daughter's birthday that Saturday, and then racing around with the family on Sunday. I was actually glad to be back at work this morning. <It's> like, yay! I can cyber loaf. Check for more rumors under the guise of verifying payroll. But anyway, moving on. So one thing I made a promise to Ray, I would not gush too much over the Drakkari stuff. There's a lot of key details. We're going to go over that in broad strokes. There's also some really good stuff already out on the net. So again, I would recommend two places I go to. Bell of Lost Souls, they literally sat down with the codex and read through it page by page. So if you're looking for point values, major changes, we'll go. They're the best place to go there. Ray and I are going to go over some more how do we see these being used and some more of the design features. And also we're going to touch on one thing that no one's talked about yet, is how this codex is going to play into the Inari. Because Drakkari, even in their index form, have already been a part of the Inari magic this year when it comes to tournament victories. But we're going to talk about how this codex brings some new life to that. Also, at the end of the program, Ray will announce the winner of our Facebook contest. So you had a couple entries so far?
Yep.
All right. So hang on tight. See if you're our lucky winner. So after the break, we'll talk a little bit about Drakkari and their obsessions. All right, we are back, and as we talked a little bit about last week, so last time as we recorded, the original, some of the teasers, the first Warhammer community tease came out regarding Drakkari. Nothing specific about one particular sub-faction, or as they call them, obsessions. But one thing they did unload on us is this new way of building an army that's unique to Drakkari. That involves three patrols. So if you take three patrols, you get four additional command points. So being battle forged, you would rank it up to seven. And then if you take another three, so you're taking six patrols, you get another big boost in command points, which immediately started this big firestorm of, are they going to make an exception for this rule? Because in match play, you're only allowed three detachments. It hasn't been officially announced, but seeing a lot of the verbiage going back and forth from the frontline gaming guys who run the ITC, there's going to be no exception coming. So plan on three detachments. Funny note, and I was trying to make lists so I could speak constructively today on the podcast, and I was having a very difficult time. I said, this patrol thing is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And I finally, why is that? Well, I kind of misunderstood what goes into a patrol. So I'm thinking, like, well, I want at least two, if not three Ravagers in my list, and I need three patrols to do that? This is a waste of time. Until I went back online and realized that it's not 0-1 for heavies, 0-1 for elites, 0-1 for... It's 0-2. Whoops. So it does open up a few more options, but So if I had 10 seconds to explain the Drakari Codex, what's changed? Massive price reductions, but also you've split up the witches, cabals, and covens into separate groups. So you should not be mixing and matching them in the same detachment. So the first thing Ray asked, hey, how much is your list now? Because most players, when they come get a new codex, they take their old list, put it back into Army Builder, and find out, oh, my list is now 200 points cheaper. All I came back with is, my list is illegal. I was like, oh. So, for example, my typical list was an Archon, a Succubus in the HQ slot, a whole bunch of mishmash of warriors and witches, usually more warriors just for points values, a metric ton of Scourges and Ravagers, and then maybe one or two units of Talos to weather the Alpha Strike. Completely illegal. Can't run it anymore. So what you have is your Cabal units, you have your Cult units, and your Coven units. And so long as they stay in their own detachments, you can choose individual obsessions. So the Cabal got 4 obsessions. The Witches and the Covens each got 3. And we've also found out a new trick. If you're waiting for your codex to come out and you want to know which chapter tactics are going to be applied to your codex, look at the decal sheet that comes with your models. That's usually the biggest giveaway. So basically, if there's a decal on that sheet, that group is going to be in your codex. So let's get, I'm going to skip ahead before we get to all the different cabals and all that stuff. Let's talk about the biggest buzz on the internet right now, and that would be the anti-stratagem stratagem. Ray, have you seen this thing?
Yes.
So the first thing everyone's complaining about was there's no Vect. So Vect is like the major character for Drakari. He's not in the book. Sorry. But his presence can be felt through this little stratagem. Feels like it when they took out all the characters from Grey Knights and moved all their characters into the Warlord table. So, this stratagem is Agents of Vect. Short version is, whenever your opponent plays a stratagem, roll a die. On a 1, they run it like normal. On a 2 up, they do not get to run the stratagem. I can't remember if it's a 5 up or a 6 up. Not only do they not get to run the stratagem, but they also lose the points they would have spent on that stratagem.
That is crazy useful.
It is crazy useful. Think about in the implication. Now it's expensive. It's 3 command points.
Yeah, you're going to be using up about half of your command points. But that could be a game changer.
So I'm just going to kind of give a couple examples of game changing where that would be. So one of the most popular armies right now on the tournament circuit is an Alpha Legion cultist bomb. I want to change things up, and I'm going to go, yes, it is a 6 up. So the opponent not only loses the stratagem, but also loses these command points. So they're going to take their cultist bomb, which you've already whittled down with all your splinter fire and your anti-infantry, which, by the way, Drakari have a ton of. And they go, no big deal. I'm going to spend my 2 command points, and I'm going to get my 30 to 40 cultists to land in your back zone. And you go, no. No, you don't. On a 2 up, not only do you not get that back forward presence that is essential for chaos, but they also lose the squad. Because you remember, there's only going to be like 3 or 4 guys left in the squad. So now they got 3 or 4 cultists hanging out in the wind going, we were supposed to disappear and reappear at the other side of the table like a cheap Atari 2600 game. Now we're still hanging in the middle of the wind. This stinks. So that's a pretty big deal right there. Some of those key. What other stratagem? What's another stratagem that drives you nuts that you would just love to see stopped?
Oh, I really have to think about that one because I can't remember the last time I actually played a game where there was much use of the command points. Honestly, probably one of the ones that allow you to pass leadership.
There you go. I've ripped, yeah, ripped into your unit, and yeah, you're making a leadership at plus 12, you know, something like that, which is, again, back to the cultist example. Imperial Guard could see that. I could actually see that with Tyranids, that, you know, maybe they're out of range of Synapse. I'm just going to spend these two command points, and they're going to auto-stay. No, you won't on a 2+. I'm going to spend 3 command points and watch that. So now I know you have an opportunity to get a kill point off of that, because now you're killing a unit that normally would be there. And chances are why that opponent of yours wants to spend the 2 command points to stay there, because he wants to hold on to an objective. That's a 2-point swing in a single turn off of 3 command points. That can get pretty powerful. We touched a little bit earlier in the show that we talk about Inari examples. There's also a lot of good synergy just with traditional craft world. So another one I could see there is your opponent, you're playing your, you got your Farseers and you got your Hemlock Fighters and all your psychic stuff going, partnering up with Drukhari, and your buddies there playing Kronos Tyranids. And he goes, "You're going to try and cast something on me? Nah, here's my stratagem. You're rolling a D6. And you go, no, I'm not. Here's 3 command points back. I'm going to be casting at full strength." I mean, that's the whole reason why Kronos Hive World is so popular. And you can shut it off now on a 2+.
Yeah, a little expensive, but worth it.
It could be very worth it. It could be very game-changing. And I think it will also be very meta-changing as well, because real players will have to realize that not only either one of two ways, my army cannot be reliant on this one or two stratagems to work every time, or the opposite, where, you know, Eldar and Yunari might want to just bring a small detachment of this Drukhari just so they can get hands on that particular stratagem. So, by the way, if you are looking for that, again, Agents of Vect is the name of the stratagem. It is unique to the Cabal of the Black Heart, which happens to be Vect's personal Cabal. So if you're looking for that, that would be the Cabal that you're looking for. Other traits for that particular Cabal include they get all army-wide. They get a +1 to the power from pain chart, which has not changed from the previous index version. So a lot of people are focusing on, ooh, that means they get reroll charges on turn 2, and that could be really nasty for assault. I'm more excited that they get +1 to in the fight phase on turn 3, and then on turn 4, the entire army becomes fearless. That gets pretty brutal pretty quick. That's one of the problems has always been with the, it's really cool to be fearless on turn 5, but are you going to live long enough to see that? So that you become fearless a turn sooner is very valuable. So really neat Cabal. A second Cabal of interest is the Poison Tongue. This one's pretty neat. You get to reroll wound rolls of 1 for melee weapons and all the poison weapons, which is most of the anti-infantry shooting that Drukhari have. So it becomes a very nifty ability in terms of getting those extra wounds on there, and also both shooting and close combat. So it's pretty nice there. Splinter racks are back. Those are pretty nice. Added basically an exploding 6. Not quite as good as Tesla. It's only 2 additional hit, 1 additional hit instead of 2 additional hits, but it's still pretty cool. The one you're going to hear the most about, though, is the Cabal of the Flayed Skull. This one is pretty powerful because it just adds a lot of utility to a lot of basic pieces, tools of the Drukhari Codex. Most of those basic tools got major point reductions. So, for example, right off the bat, add 3 inches to the move characteristics of all models with this obsession that have the fly keyword. If you have a minimum and maximum move characteristics, only add 3 inches to the maximum. So all your flyers, all your transports, all your skimmers, all your jet bikes, everybody's, well, not your jet bikes, excuse me, those aren't Cabal. They get an extra 3 inches. In addition, enemy units do not receive the benefit of their saving throws for being in cover against attacks made by models with this obsession that can fly, or that are embarked upon a transport that can fly. So
your strategy is definitely on the flying boats and shooting things that are in cover.
Exactly. So splinter racks with plenty of raiders, plenty of venoms, get out there and just open fire. Pretty good to stop right there, but no, they add one more sentence. Reroll to hit rolls of one for such models when attacking with rapid-fire weapons. So right off the bat, all your Kabbalite warriors, all their weapons are pretty much rapid-fire, all their poison weapons, so that's really nice. And you probably then, in case, want to favor more towards Venoms because splinter cannons are rapid fire, whereas the Raiders have heavy and assault weapons. So actually, they're classified as this heavy and they become assault when they add it to the boat. So a pretty neat little. So you're rerolling once, you're ignoring cover, you get an extra 3 inches to move. What's not to like? So tremendous amount of firepower there. The last one is Cabal of the Obsidian Rose, and the range characteristics of all assault, rapid fire, and heavy weapons used by this obsession is increased by 6 inches.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. So we got to remember, splinter cannons already had a 36-inch range. I believe Dark Lances also had either 36 or 48. So plus, you got the addition of, okay, your splinter guns went from 24 to 30 inches, which means you have 15-inch rapid fire range. Gets pretty nice, pretty quick. So there's a lot of utility in this one as well. What makes this unit, or this Cabal, I should say, very interesting is they have a specific stratagem for them. And whenever they lose models due to morale tests, those models, so let's say you fail a morale test, and you're going to lose 3 models. Those 3 models get to attack before they pulled from the table. Okay, big deal. We've seen this in other armies. The difference is if they actually kill another model, they don't go anywhere. So if they're in the, yeah. So if they're in the shooting phase, they get to shoot normally. If they're in the fight phase, they only fight with 1 attack. But if they successfully kill an enemy model, then no models are pulled.
That is nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So there's lots of neat little stuff with that little army that can go from there. Moving on to the witch cults. So right off the bat, Cult of the Cursed Blade. This is one of the ones that's getting quite a bit of traction online. Increase the strength characteristics of all models with this obsession by 1. So right off the bat, it's like, oh, that sounds great. Which is already inherently strength 3, so making them strength 4 makes them from meh to average. But wounding on 3s versus wounding on 4s rather than versus wounding on 5s against power armor, it's kind of nice. And you got to remember that cult units still benefit from combat drugs. They have not changed at all. So you could also stack on an additional +1 strength using the right combat drug. In addition, when a unit with this obsession fails a morale test, only 1 model from that unit must flee.
Oh, yeah, I remember this is the one I said if I was to do it, I would go with.
It'd probably be a smart choice because the other thing I see with this is if you they increase the abilities of the witches, first of all, they increase their durability. They have a 6-up invul outside of close combat. They still have the 4+ invul in close combat. So they can actually dodge some shooting attacks. They're a little bit more resilient to enemy fire. But one of the key things they had was a no escape. Try to fall back. You rolled off against your opponent. If your opponent wins the roll-off, they do fall back as normal. Otherwise, they stay put. They now added that if you take the razor net, which is like the Roman gladiatorial net with the pike thing, it's a special weapon for witches. Your opponent rolls a D3 and you roll a D6.
Oh, that's dirty.
That is dirty. So what makes this really nice is that you can then stack this up. So one of the tactics I was using before the Codex is, remember, a raider has a capacity of 10 models. So I'd put a 5-person unit of witches to be my anvil, and then I would put the 5 incubi in the same raider. That way, in the old times, you used to put one raider filled with incubi, one with the other, and all my opponents would just shoot the incubi raider and make them walk. Now they jump out of the same boat. You kill one of my boats, I got 2 other boats just like it. So the witches would jump out, hold you in place, then the incubi would charge in, and then you try to get away. The witches keep you there so the incubi can hack at you for another turn. That's now greatly improved for multiple reasons. One we just talked about. The other one, by the way, Inkipi dropped in points cost as well and have a whole bunch of new tricks up their sleeves for extra attacks. And one other thing, just real quick, for Curse of the Blade, I'm not going to get too much into Warlord traits, but this one was just really, really cool. Your Succubus, let's say they're slain in the fight phase. Yeah, roll a d6 on a 2+. That unit suffers d6 mortal wounds. I just like this. Yeah, I can see this like dramatic fight scene at the end where, you know, she's got like, so, you know, all these swords stuck in her and she's still fighting away. It's a pretty cool thing. So a lot of neat combos going on there. Cult of Strife. The Spectacle of Murder increased the attacks characteristics of these models with an obsession by one during any turn in which they've charged, were charged, or make a heroic intervention. So anyway, we've already talked about this with Khorne. Very, very useful. What we haven't talked about today is, yeah, witches got slightly better. They went down in cost. They got a bonus attack. We'd already talked about they got a 6+ invul. So a 20-person unit could dish out 81 attacks on the charge.
That's a lot.
By the way, you could deep strike them for one command point using the Webway portal. That's still in there from chapter approved. Nothing has changed. So okay, that's pretty nice. And if you're still kind of on the fence about, should I play Inari? Should I play Drukhari? Cult of Strife have a unique stratagem for 3 command points. Yeah, I know it's steep. But if they kill a unit in that phase for 3 command points, they can act again. It just has to be the same action. So, for example, if they kill something in the shooting phase, they can shoot again. If they kill something in the fight phase, they can fight again.
That could work for you.
Yeah, it does. So let's say, for example, I charge. So I've got my, I got a unit and I got a character who's buffing it, and Ray has a unit of 20 of them coming out of the other little raider there, and I'm snoozing, don't realize that my character is exposed. So Ray piles into the unit, 81 attacks, and he puts a truckloading of attacks on my character, kills the character. But my unit's pretty resilient, so I'll hold them up for a little while. Ray then goes, I killed the unit. Here's 3 command points. I'll swing again. There's not too many units left in the game that can absorb 162 attacks, even if they are strength 3.
It's definitely a little expensive, but I don't know if I'd put it at 2 either. So
it also shows you just how strong Inari are. So whenever, you know, chances are the FAQ will drop sometime between this recording and when we release this. Of course, every podcast has said that for the last 2 weeks. But just remember, no matter what they nerf with Inari, as long as they still have the ability to go again in the same phase, other armies are playing 3 command points for it. All right, one last cult to go over real quick. The Cult of Red Grief. This one speaks to me. I know it's probably not the most tactically sound, and a lot of my friends are saying you should go with the Cursed Blade, but this is really cool. Units with Obsession can charge the same turn in which they is advanced. In addition, you can reroll failed charges for units with this Obsession. So immediately everybody's kind of poo-pooing. You already get the reroll charges after turn 2 because of Power from Pain. Not every model in the Codex has Power from Pain. Matter of fact, not every Witch Cult. So this means you can reroll charges with your vehicles. Why would we do that? You send the raider in to charge to soak up the overwatch, so your little witches with their 6+ don't get blown away by lucky 6s from your opponent's withering fire. So it actually is pretty neat. And those of you who've seen my army know I have an obsession of my own, and that's with Reaver jet bikes. So Reaver jet bikes, they got an upgrade in many ways. Biggest thing is a dramatic point cost. They're almost half price now. Their movement went up to 18 inches. They kept the automatic 8 inches when they advance. So that means I can move 26 inches across the table, and I can still charge you. I was already doing turn 1 charges for those who you were deploying too close to the front line. Now it's a given. This is so cool. And there's a couple other Reaver upgrades. I don't know if I'll have time to get to all of them today. But really, really cool. So it's one of those I could definitely see an Outrider detachment being Cult of Grief and just unloading with all my Reaver jet bikes. So I just can't wait. Other key things about Reaver goodness, by the way, the dreaded Heat Lance has gone down in price. It used to be 25 points, and it was the only Melta weapon in the Codex. It's now down to 12.
Wow, that's a big drop.
It's a big drop. So let's put this in perspective. How bad were Reavers in the past? Reavers were the same cost as a Shining Spear, and you got a Splinter Rifle and two close combat attacks at strength 4, AP minus 1, 1 damage. They're now 18 points, same weapon loadout, same everything we discussed. They're now faster. You can add a Melta Gun, which is an 18-inch strength 6, AP minus 4, damage D6, rolling 2 dice with inside of 9 inches for the same price. It's great. Yeah, major discount.
What's their leadership? Mind me.
Off the top of my head, I think it's 7. Okay. Let's get to the Covens real quick because I want to make sure they give them their due. There's some interesting things in the Covens. Most of their strength in the past came from formations because they got their own little codex, and they had a lot of neat little relics. That really hasn't changed. Some of the new relics for the Covens really is where they shine. But their three obsessions are quite interesting. The first one is the Prophets of the Flesh. This is Urien's group. And they get an improved invulnerable save of 4+.
Nice.
Yeah. So Talos, Rax, Grotesques, as well as your Homoculi, all rocking a 4+ invul save. Pretty nifty stuff there. They also have a nifty Warlord trait. This goes... keep in mind, so you'll be seeing a lot of this. You'll probably see like a small patrol of Homoculi just to get this for you. Once per battle, you can reroll a single hit, a single wound, single saving throw, blah, blah, blah. Nothing too exciting. If your army's battle forged, though, you get D3 additional command points at the start of the battle. And you take that into account with the Archon. There's a generic Warlord ability that every time your opponent plays a stratagem on a roll of a 6, you get a command point for it. You can start recycling some command points pretty quick. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Chaos Space Marines don't have any way of recycling command points. Really puts them on the back foot when it comes to that.
You know, one thing I could really see them changing command points around in the future, especially with something like the Chapter Approved. This first time around where they introduced one for every faction, I could see them doing that again. Or every faction gets another new stratagem.
Oh, absolutely. I could also see them fleshing out, let's be honest, even in the Craft World book, they didn't hit every Craft World. There's 3 or 4 that they talked about that didn't get Craft World traits. You could do that. I can even say, like, Blood Angels, I'll surprised Flesh Terrorists didn't get a separate chapter tactic. So they could add those on with their own specific stratagems to go with it. There's a lot they can do without having to re-release whole new armies, you know, recreating some new Xenos creature. There's a lot out there that they can easily get done.
Right.
There's like two, but no, absolutely. All right. Next coven, the Dark Creed. So if you were fond of the fear tactics from the previous codex, this is your Coven. Model and enemy units must subtract 1 from their leadership characters for each unit from this obsession that is within 6 inches to a maximum of minus 3.
That can be strong.
This can get further buffed because there is an additional Warlord trait that offers the stacks another minus 1. Plus, Covens do get access to Phantasm Grenade Launchers. That can drop it down another minus 1. So not right there off the bat, you're causing, you could be at minus 5. Minus 3 is still pretty crippling.
I think it might depend because that one says it would only allow for you to get to a max. So while the other one
for that ability,
that one would probably not. The
The Warlord? Yeah, it might not. So I have to read the exact writing. But there's a lot of opportunities there. And then again, we talked about allying some of the Craft World friends. How about the Hemlock Fighter? Cast Terrify. Make leadership checks in the psychic phase. Ah!
So yeah, fun stuff. Lowering someone's morale when you know they're going to have to take a morale check at the end of the turn can be strong, especially if you've got a good start going.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things I could see yourself doing is dropping you know, via the webway portal, two units of this particular coven, or you just zoom forward with raiders or venoms to get in position. And then in the back, you've got your cabal units with the long range shooting, and they're firing at some sort of screen. And oh, by the way, you're now within 6 inches of these guys, minus one, minus two, plus the eight guys you lost. Make a leadership at minus 10. You start picking up squads really quick.
Yes.
Interesting, there is a stratagem, by the way. It's across all Drukhari, not just this particular coven, but it comes into play with this particular coven. If you kill the warlord in the fight phase, spend a command point, and the entire opponent's army is minus one leadership.
Okay, then.
And if you want to do some more character hunting, this is unique to the Dark Creed, again, for two command points. This stratagem, when you select a Dark Creed unit to shoot within the shooting phase until the end of the phase, models in that unit can target enemy characters even if they are not the closest enemy unit.
Speaking of Talos, are you thinking about running some again?
I'm not sure yet. And if I would, I would use this next coven, which is Coven of the Twelve, because this is the one reason why I stopped running Corpse Leaf Claw or trying to resurrect it in 8th edition. Simply because they didn't hit that hard. And with this particular coven, this brings it back. Basically improves the armor penetration of all models in the army by one. So all of a sudden, Talos, which by the way got a major price decrease, as well as all their weapons got severely reduced. So now you can pretty much field a fully kitted out Talos for the price of what was once stock in the previous index.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I haven't seen any specific stratagems for them or something that akin to the Corpse Thief Claw, but an additional minus one would be really handy for their macro blades. I think that was pretty neat. So one thing we've not talked about real quick is why bother with this whole patrol shenanigans? We've been talked about at the start of this. Why don't I just run a brigade and lock up all these command points? One of the things you can run a Cabal Brigade, you can get by with a Coven Brigade. You cannot, well, we're not 100% sure because we've not seen an update from Forge World. So we're not sure if a Tantalus is has the cult, which cult keyword or not. But basically, in order to run a Brigade, you need to have three fast attacks, three heavy supports, three elites. Not every sub-faction has those in their section. For example, witches lost blood brides, which were the elite version of the witches, which is no big deal because regular witches got the plus one attack, so you're basically getting blood brides for a major discount. They used to be 13 or 14 in the index, they're now down to 8.
Now the same can be said for the warriors and the, were they trueborn?
That's correct. So that used to be the staple of previous editions. Four Trueborn with blasters, two Trueborn with lances, put them either, originally you would put them in a boat and they would fly it around and be like a fire base. Last year's Dark Eldar champion, Herb Schaefer, he ran three of those units and he slapped them in a Tantalus. So he had this major gunboat just flying. By the way, the Tantalus has big enough guns to begin with. Another thing you started to see every now and then, sort of a poor man's Dark Reaper spam, is you put Yavrain with this unit and use them as an Ari. Because at that point in the index, they didn't have a obsession to use. So that massive unit would shoot twice. So the Trueborn are gone. Now, before you panic, what they did change was special weapons and heavy weapons are a lot easier to get for Cabalites. One special weapon for every five Cabalite warriors and one heavy weapon for every 10. So if you max out a squad, you're going to get the same number of heavy weapons and special weapons as you did before with your regular Trueborn. Plus another point reduction in warriors, as well as a major point reduction in the splinter cannons. You're in pretty good shape. Blasters got more effective. Point value went up slightly. It's worth it. So you can mix and match and try and do major battalions with that, or brigade, excuse me, to get the max command points. One of the things you're going to need to do is there are a couple entries in the codex that are called free agents. So they do not benefit from obsessions, but they can be included in your detachment without voiding your detachment of your chosen obsession. And those are the incubi, the scourges, as well as beastmasters. So make it kind of fill in some of the slots there that can help out. Incubi, as mentioned, got a point reduction. Scourges got a point reduction, but with blasters going up, it actually becomes a wash. There's still a unit of 5 scourges with 4 blasters comes out around 132 points.
All right.
Yeah, so you're still going to have those drop in, and then they deep strike naturally, so don't need to spend any command points. So they're going to still be around, and as they have been in the past. There's a lot of folks talking online. Ray, I want to get your opinion on this.
Okay.
The way Scourges were ran in 5th edition was with Haywire Blasters. Because back in the day, Haywire Blasters were nasty. You know, lots of glancing hits, a couple penetrating hits. They just made mincemeat out of vehicles. In 8th edition, they got this odd mechanic that on a 4+, they inflict a mortal wound, and then whatever you roll to it's strength 4 weapon, if you're lucky enough to guess, get a 6, because most vehicles are toughness 5, toughness 7 or 8, you might get a 5 or 6 and cause an additional normal wound. Haywire Blasters have greatly improved. They went from being 12 points a pop to 8 points a pop. They went from being Assault 1 to Assault D3.
Sounds pretty good.
Okay, so there's a lot of people online thinking Haywire Scourges are back.
I mean, Haywire is definitely not what it once was, but it can still be useful. And I know, what was it back in the day? It was, you know, you roll a 2+ and it was an automatic glancing hit, and then a 6 was an automatic pen. But I mean, I don't imagine that the new setting is any worse. It's not certainly not better, but being able to get the mortal wound is useful enough.
Yeah, and I keep thinking about that, because the mortal wound is, well, the good news is it bypasses the armor, because most vehicles have 3+ or 4+ armor.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of demon engines out there that are going to get, so now if they get through, they're still going to get a 5+ or a 6+ save against, you know, kind of a field of pain mechanic. But if I can put down, so it's 4 guys with 4 Haywire Blasters, that's 8 shots. Let's round it up to 9 for simple math. 6 will hit. I'm putting 3 mortal wounds and then probably 2 regular wounds per volley.
That's pretty good.
Not bad. And so it may not kill a tank outright, but it'll definitely put it, you know, cripple it, get it down to its lowest wound band pretty quick. So those are kind of your free agents. So I did not see a whole lot of individual stratagems for them, but they're kind of nice, so they can fill out your battalions, or to particularly one particular cabal, or you just want to go one particular witch group or one particular coven. You can fill those things out with these free agent models. A truckload of warlord traits, truckloads of additional relics, more than we can talk about in the time that we've got allotted here, but very interesting. I am, even with all these points reductions, still finding it a little difficult to get all my toys into lists that I've used to play in the past because of this kind of mixing and matching. But one thing I talked about when the index first dropped is the Ravager was king. The Ravager's back. 15-point drop from its base shell, and then Disintegrators dropped from 30 points to 15 points a pop.
Okay.
So basically, if you had 2 in your list, guess what? You can put in a 3rd for free.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah. The reason why I like Disintegrators over the Dark Lance version, Dark Lance is you get 3 shots, statistically, two should hit, never fails. I always miss with two. And then at least one or two hits at strength eight. You should wound, but chances are you won't. And then you get that nice minus four at D6 damage. With disintegrators, I'm getting nine shots at eight at strength five. So I'm having a little trouble with vehicles, but I'm still going to wound on fives. Minus three AP and two damage each. No dice roll required.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's great for, it's a good Primaris Marine killer. It's really good for even Poxwalker screens because that two damage, you know, forces two disgusting resilience rolls. You should be able to take out some models. So there are quite a few mysteries still left in the Codex, but I think the biggest thing is Drakkari are definitely on an even footing. They're not a rehash of Craftworld Eldar. They have their own little flair. And if you're not that impressed with the Drakkari at this point, I'd wait a few months because their third cousin, the Harlequins, are coming out pretty soon. So nothing more than adding a nice little Harlequin detachment to add a little close combat to your already existing Drakkari. All right. So with all those particular changes, Ray, what, as we kind of alluded to, there's still a few Inari players out there. Now, most Inari players take Cabalite Warriors to fill out their troop slots because they're basically dirt cheap and maybe use them as screens. Scary news. They got cheaper by a point. And as we mentioned, they get one special weapon for every five guys in the squad and an additional heavy weapon for every 10 guys in the squad. All their special weapons, all their heavy weapons either saw a point decrease, and if the points didn't go down, the number of shots went up.
Well, if I remember right, when, anybody who's going to be wanting to play anything like a Inari list or a list with multiples, if you go straight Inari, you have to be careful because first off, they tell you to use the points from the index. They basically say that you're using the index. But if someone's doing a detachment of a craft world and a detachment of Drakkari, they could really pick out the best stuff and really capitalize on these strategies between the two of them.
And the first thing I could probably see, let's say all that holds true, the FAQ doesn't change anything. You have to use the, as I mentioned, Scourges with, you know, four Scourges with blasters, and you usually take the fifth. The leader can take a blast pistol, or you usually keep the Shard Carbine just to take out some anti-infantry screens. They pretty much didn't change. They're roughly hovering around that 130 point mark. Being that they're free agents, they never had access to a Drakkari obsession, so going in Inari, they pretty much lose nothing. So now you've got this heavy shooter, and then if you make them Inari, they can either shoot twice, or they can, be that they're jump troops, they can move, I think it's 14 inches? It's 12 or 14, pretty sure it's 14. Advancing for an additional D6, so they got a lot of movement. They're one of the most heavily armored models in this particular codex, which doesn't say much, but it's a 4-up, 6-up base. So you've got a lot of options there with that particular unit. Makes a great addition to any Inari team.
Well, is there any kind of points difference in between the index and the codex?
2 points. So Scourges were originally 14 points. They went down to 12 points, but then the blaster went up from 15 points to 18 points. So it's pretty much a wash. So you probably say, what's the point? No pun intended. The blaster greatly improved from being damage D3 to damage D6.
Well, then you'd be using that the old version of the blaster as well in a Inari list, a straight up Inari list. I really think that any Inari players are just going to go with the multiple detachment, utilizing just a detachment of Inari, and then having a detachment of Drakkari or Craftworld or Harlequin or whichever they're going to go with, so that they can capitalize. They're going to want to use the stratagems until the point where they can actually get their own as Unari.
Yep. I'd be curious to see what those look like. And the other thing I can think of too is like, I wouldn't mind seeing if I was playing Inari, take a Ravager or two, you know, keep them in my backfield. And I could even keep them as a separate Drakari, a detachment if I wanted to. But long and short is I'm firing downfield 36 inches. And let's say I'm firing in a unit right next to my Shining Spears. If I wipe the unit, great. The Shining Spears get an either extra move, extra attack, extra shooting attack, I should say, charge ahead of time, whatever you want them to do. So being that they're kind of, you have this forward element and now I've got this back element that can put a lot of shots downfield. Very handy, kind of a strength from death, soul burst battery, you know, just by opening fire on a bunch of stuff. So pretty neat stuff we have there. As you can tell, I'm really excited, but I also know that there's still some changes still to come. Via the FAQ. Also hearing a lot of nifty ideas coming out from Tau and Necrons. So as that codex has now gotten to people's hands and they've been starting to work with it, there are some interesting new projects or coming out from there. We'll keep you guys updated as that particular change comes through on the meta. In the meantime, it's time to go over our ITC top 10. As well as our contest winner to be announced.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after our lengthy discussion of Drakari. We are here to talk about the current ITC top 10. You're probably saying to yourself, wait a minute, you said at the beginning of the show there were no new tournaments last weekend. Yeah, well, the guys at Best Coast Pairings have been doing a great job of trying to get caught up. So a lot of last-minute results from the past few weeks are just now getting entered in, and there's been a major shakeup in the ITC top 10. So without further ado, let's take a look. Moving into 10th place, Ryan Olson is in with 339 points, and he's, yes, take a deep breath, 278 points behind the leader. Ninth place, a familiar name from last year's ITC top 10, TJ Lanigan moves into ninth place as a mere 2-point lead over Ryan Olson. In eighth place, Patrick McNeil has a nice cushion of about 23 points over TJ. In seventh place, Mr. Custodes himself, Jeff In Control Robinson, rocking about 366 points and 250 points behind our leader. In sixth place, Jeremy Applebaum, 375 points, 241 points behind our leader. Fifth place, Mitch Pelham, Mr. Hellhound himself, dropped out from second place down to fifth place so far this week. Gary Frank moves up to fourth place from seventh place last week. He's 191 points behind the leader. Daniel Sansone makes a big leap into the ITC top 10 this week, jumping all the way up to third place at 168 points behind the leader. Number two, moving up from number three last week and fresh off his Adepticon win, Matt Root. Apparently, I've been corrected. Apparently, his proper pronunciation is Root. He is mere 59 points off the lead, but still in second place, which means your top ITC player for the week is none other than Joshua Death. Yes, he holds on for yet one more week, and he's sitting pretty at the top of the ITC standings with 617 points. So since we didn't have a lot of tournament coverage at the beginning of the show, we're going to add a little bit more here. One of the big differentiations, there's a lot of movement that can still happen over the next few weeks. Josh is actually maxed out. He has got all five of his scoring events in place, and he's the only player in the top 10 to do so. Doesn't mean anyone else can catch up, but Josh has also made it difficult for everyone as he's gotten several wins at GT level. So he's got quite a few points. I mean, at 620, he's averaging 130 points an event, so he's doing quite well. Matt Root has 4 events, so he could easily leapfrog Josh with a big win. Daniel Sansone, as I mentioned, leapt up to 3rd. He's got 5 events under his belt. Gary Frank, Mitch Pelham, as well as Jeremy Applebaum, who make up 4th, 5th, and 6th place, is what I'm trying to say, all sitting at 4 events. Jeff Robinson has probably the most potential to move up. He is at 366 points after only 3 events. So he's averaging 122 points per event, which is about 7 points more than our current leader, Josh Death. So if he continues at that pace, he could easily leap into first place. Patrick McNeil also has 4 events under his belt. And I mentioned 9th and 10th place, don't cry them a river, because both TJ Lanigan and Ryan Olson each only have 3 events under their belts. Both of them are averaging roughly 110 points per event, which is equal just below what our leader's doing. And we've got several big events coming in the next few months, so there's an opportunity to pick up some big points for some big movement. So to be already sitting in 10th place with only 3 events under your belt, good place to be with quite a bit of the season still to come. Speaking of which, Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
So this weekend coming up, there is only one GT level event currently showing up on the Best Coast Pairings app. That is the Colorado Cutthroats 40K Grand Tournament. That's at the Westminster Hobby Town in Westminster, Colorado.
One more quick note, Broadside Bash, the next major coming up. It's only in 2 weeks, so we should see some major movement there. And without further ado, Ray, who is the Exterminatus Podcast Facebook contest winner?
So, victory goes to Mark Salmon.
Congratulations, Mr. Salmon. Thank you for participating in our contest, and we'll be sending out the prize shortly. Ray, can you remind everybody, what are we giving away?
It was a box of the Alaris Custodians. Those are the 3-pack of the Terminator-style Custodians.
Very cool. So, very excited to see that go out. I appreciate all your listenership. Ray, any closing thoughts as we round out the show for this week?
Just keep an eye out for the FAQ. Don't be surprised if you don't see something that you thought you'd see on there. People have been talking about all sorts of random things being on there. And if there's something you'd like to see, remember to ask them, because they can't answer a question if they haven't been given it.
Also, key thing, we have a quick ask for you guys. If you guys can hop on over to iTunes and give us a rating, it would be great to be 5 stars at this point. Any rating at this point, any constructive feedback would be wonderful. I would like to get us back up to the top of the levels there. The more activity, the more ratings we have, the more other listeners, other friends of yours may not be aware of the Exterminatus Podcast. Get the word out. Love to hear more reaction from you guys, as well as reach out to as many of your ears as we can. So with that, Theo's closing thoughts, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
Thank you again for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast. All right. I am.
Eric is obsessed about obsessions.
So we get the Human League song going. You don't even know what I'm talking about. No. It's an old 80s hit.
Give me a year.
Oh, God. 84, maybe?
That's like 4 years before I was born.
That's as embarrassing as that last time. It's just like, hey, what's your favorite Megadeth album? Oh, this one. Oh, that came out before I was born. I was like, shut up.
To be fair, I probably have
you
that,
it's
that album
required
too.
Required reading, required listening, but good Lord. All right. All right, let's get on with the show.